Hello and welcome to River Writers, a production of the Writers Guild of Astoria, a 501c3 nonprofit supporting writers and literary arts on the North Coast in the Lower Columbian region. Aired the second Monday of each month at 9 a.m., River Writers provides a chance to peek behind the curtain at the craft of writing. What motivates writers to do the work they do? What have they learned through their creative process? This month, I'm speaking to Mike Francis. Mike graduated with a degree in journalism from Northwest University in Chicago, Illinois. He spent 22 years as a reporter at the Oregonian. Today, he lives in Astoria, and he's the Associate Director of Communications for Pacific University. He's on the City of Astoria's Planning Commission, and he is a frequent contributor at Rick's Poetry Open Mic. How long did you write for the Oregonian?
About 21 years.
21 years. So they must have been doing something right for a while to keep you there that long.
It was a good place to be for a long time. I mean, I was actually there in what I would call a heyday when we were, we hired a bunch of great reporters and good editors. And
did they get a lot of awards out of there?
Won them a couple of Pulitzers.
Oh, few Pulitzers. Wow.
None of which I had much of a hand in, but... it was just everything felt like the momentum was very positive. It was a good place to be.
Yeah.
That's not the case at most newspapers anymore.
Well, shit. Yeah, anywhere. I need journalism anymore. Jeez. Yeah. But so during your time, your 21 years at the Oregonian, what are some of the most memorable stories that you've worked on?
Well, I mean, it kind of went in chapters. There was, I guess... I was associated with business news for a long time. I was a business news columnist at the Oregonian for a couple of years, I think.
Because you started at the Kansas City.
I was the editor of the business journal, so it was a logical way into the paper.
Uh-huh.
But then, actually, it was broken up. I left the paper to sort of jump into the internet world with terrible timing, bounced around, got laid off, companies shot out from under me. And pleaded my way back into the paper. So it was basically 2 10-year stints. And when I started the second time, they said, well, we have room for you out in the West Bureau. Do you want to go out there? I said, sure, yeah, that sounds good.
What's the West Bureau?
It was at the time we had a little bureau in a shopping mall in Beaverton.
So it wasn't even in that iconic Oregonian building?
No, for like a year or so, I was out there in the West Bureau.
They put you out in the sticks.
Those bureaus were not bad places to stay. If you had a good editor out there, you felt like you were away from the Death Star. You're doing your own thing, but of course you don't have the same readership. You're basically writing for your zone.
Right, okay.
And then occasionally they would pick it up for the main paper.
But what are some of the best stories that you've written?
Well, what I always tell people, and you know better than anybody, is that my life changed when I started when I went to Iraq the first time as an
employee. Well, that's what I was going to ask you. How did you get into writing military?
And stuff? this is now it's kind of embarrassing to admit, but I guess there's no harm in it anymore. But when I was out there in the West Bureau thinking, okay, I got to get myself back into the mainstream pretty soon. So I don't know how. At one point...
It's like, put me in the game. I've been on the bench too long.
Yeah, well, I was just like, hey, I want to come up to the major leagues again.
Yeah.
And at that time, it was actually after a terrible tragedy in Iraq. The June 4th ambush on Rat Pluto took four lives. Right after that, the Oregonian decided we really need to be over there covering this war. We got a lot of... soldiers over there.
Yeah.
And then they asked for volunteers, and I was one of, I don't know, half dozen or so that said I'd like to go, even though I barely knew military ranks at all. I was a raw beginner, but I saw it, you know, frankly, there was a little bit of a motive to sort of get back into the main paper.
You had to risk it for the biscuit.
Well, I don't know what I expected out of it, and I probably didn't think it through that clearly, but I thought this will be a lot more interesting than what
that's
I'm doing.
That's like my entire life right there.
Out in the West Bureau.
I should have thought it through more, but, you know, I'm just going to go ahead and do it.
Well, if you stood around and planned too long, it never happened, so.
Right, right.
Fortunately, you know, when they did the little interviews, they liked the stuff I said, and they said, okay,
Did they put you through any kind of training to deal with military?
No. So I think papers got better about that. This was early. This is 2004. So it was right after the invasion.
That was, so you said June 4th, 2004. I was injured June 13th, 2004.
I remember. I know.
You didn't get over there fast enough.
No, I didn't quite catch you.
So you did you would send over a story a week or when they happened?
Oh, yeah. They wanted a lot from me, and I was... It's actually kind of a good thing to be 11 hours ahead because, you know, I could have it, spend my whole day, and then at the end of the day, put it all together, write a story, and send it off, and they're waking up, and they're getting it. Well, I had a photographer with me the first two trips I went. The third time, they said, it's up to you. So I was basically shooting iPhone. I think I had some digital camera that I wasn't a great photographer, but I was able to at least capture a few things.
And so why did you leave the Oregonian after 21 years?
Well, they were starting to do layoffs and things. It was clear what was happening in the industry. The number of people...
Yeah, well, that's what I want to get to. What happened in the industry?
Well, it was more what I was seeing elsewhere. Than it hadn't really hit very hard at the Oregonian, but they had already started to lay off some people. And it just became apparent to me that, you know, just standing still here, and I've been here a long time, so I have kind of a higher salary than some of the younger people. Mm-hmm. I'm an obvious target. So I was real proud of myself for finding what I thought was a good job outside. And then about a year after that, after I made that jump, they laid off 500 people, and I was in that layoff. So you can't escape the turmoil.
Yeah, I have a friend who still writes for the Oregonian. She started at the Willamette Week, but went to the Oregonian, and she's telling me that now they get paid. I don't want to say they get paid per click, but they get paid according to how many clicks their stories get.
Oh, interesting.
Can you imagine writing like that?
That wasn't an incentive for us back then.
Yeah.
It was clear at some point. You could just tell from the way stories...
It's not print journalism anymore. Now it's all on the internet.
True. It's all
They do have a print product.
Yeah.
But that's not their main focus.
That's sort of an afterthought, it seems to me. Although they might not like the way they say it.
Newspapers.
Yeah, and it's you could just tell in the way headlines are written and things like that. They're trying to entice you to click into the story and read on. And it is different. I lived through a big change. I'm sort of more from the old school side.
But we need journalism. I mean, I would say we need journalism now, like unbiased journalism today more than we ever have.
I couldn't agree more. You look around the country, I understand there are state houses where there's no reporters. I don't know if they've caught up. At the lowest point, there were no reporters sending people to, say, South Dakota's capital to cover what's happening there. And so as a result, everybody in the state is sort of trusting their elected representatives to be doing the right thing, but they don't know.
We don't have to talk about someplace far away. Let's talk about here in Astoria. We have the Daily Astorian. I know you've written a couple articles for them.
Yeah.
And I don't want to get too far into their stuff, but do they have reporters that cover local issues?
Yeah, they do. And they also they've done something that a lot of newspapers have learned how to do, which is collaborate with other outlets, like they do cooperation with KMUN.
Oh, great, yeah.
You know, Katie Frankowitz, the news director at KMUN, used to be a reporter at The Astorian. Mm-hmm. You'll still see her byline in the paper now, even though her main...
That's amazing, because we need it. We definitely need it.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I wrote for The Astorian was a little appreciation for the local newspaper, because I'd been hearing people sort of complain, you know.
Yeah.
They never cover this. They're so biased. They, you know, whatever the complaint was.
Well, they're trying hard with limited resources.
They're there. They're at the meetings.
And that's all journalism right now. They know how, and correct me if I'm wrong, but what I see is all these papers understand the importance of journalism and democratic civilization, but they're doing the best they can to fill that need, but they don't have the resources to do it all the time.
Well, yeah, I mean, the business model has totally changed.
Unless you have a billionaire that buys your paper.
And even then, you might get a Jeff Bezos or something.
Yeah, that's going to totally be biased and tell you, hey, let's not cover those stories.
Exactly, right. I mean, so a lot depends on who your owners are. And I think the Oregonians' heyday, it was a time of sort of benign neglect where the new houses said, hey, you're doing great, just keep going. We're behind you, and they didn't interfere. And I don't know how true that is anymore, but we were lucky then. Huh. Here, you know, it is worth talking about the Astorian briefly, just to say that this was a paper. Astoria was better off than a lot of towns its size because it had a daily newspaper that was owned by a family that lived here in the community. And but then now it's been sold to a national chain, and
as so many of them get sold to national chains, and then you have to go along with whatever that national chain thinks is the most important news. And
They're not gonna, you can't walk into that president's office and say, hey, you know, this thing we've got going on, and this timber sale or this problem with the port, whatever, they aren't gonna care. You know, Astoria, Oregon, where's that again?
It's like one of the places that you own. Well, I mean, I wanted to interview you. I know this is River Writers, but like journalism is so important, and it definitely is writing. And so, you know, I think it's really important to talk about like what's going on here, because we do have a lot of very unique issues, but then also a lot of rural issues.
Yes.
That need to be covered. And I wanted to talk about, I'm going to get to the open mics that you go to, because I know Rick's open mic and the Poets on the Piers kind of changed a little bit. But I kind of want to skip ahead to, you're also on the city's planning committee, right?
Commission, yeah. Commission. Actually, let's follow that thread on Rick's open mic for a second. Because since we were just talking about war coverage, I mean, what you know from that is that I spent a lot of time writing newspaper stories about issues that seemed important to soldiers and families and veterans and stuff like that. So that was one form. And a really interesting thing has happened since I came here and started going to these Rick's Open Mics, which is the poetry night, the monthly poetry night.
And that, we'll talk about that. That is like the first Tuesday of every month, right?
Not anymore. Okay. This is just last month we changed it. It's now the third Wednesday, and it's at Cala. There was a
change. Where's Cala at? K-A-L-A, right?
Right, yeah. It's Dinah Urell is a wonderful resource for Astoria. She runs Hipfish and has that entertainment venue. And so, anyway, that's where we're going. But anyway, the point I wanted to make out of that was I had friends when I came back from reporting in Iraq who would say, hey, are you going to write a book or something? Some of you guys, in fact, have asked me that. And
I got a couple stories out of you for some anthologies.
Yeah, it's true. But the thing I always said was, I don't know that I have anything new and different to say, and everybody has kind of heard the Iraq story now. I'm not burning to write a book about any of those experiences. And it's hard for me, actually, to talk about, in a personal way, about. But I found that going to these poetry things and trying to, I've mined a lot of my Iraq experiences to write poems, and it's unlocked it in a way I never imagined. I just had one. There was an ambush I got caught in on Route Irish. You know where that is, the one that goes to the airport, Baghdad Airport. And, you know, like all these things, it seemed like it was happening. A big thing was happening, and it was lasting a long time. But it was probably a really quick skirmish where this convoy I was in was rolling down this highway, and it was kind of notorious for being shot up all the time. And sure enough, suddenly these guys jumping out, they have RPGs and stuff, and they're firing at us. And so we did this big scramble. We get off the road, and I was kind of in the middle of things because just by accident, where I jumped out, they had shot up a tanker that was carrying diesel, and it was leaking diesel all over the road. But I had to stay back there behind it to protect myself, and the diesel is puzzling around my feet, and I'm thinking, this is not good. Bullets are flying everywhere, and I'm standing in diesel, and it's not clear how this is going to end.
You could drop a match in diesel in a
while. Well, now, yeah, I've learned that since then. At that moment, I did not know that. But anyway, so the point is, you know, I wrote a newspaper story about it, and it was only the careful readers, my good friends, who said, so you were in the middle of that? How come you didn't write yourself into this at all?
I'm a journalist.
I said, yeah, it's not about me. It's about them. But now, with these poems, you know, I was able to kind of write, really talk about it. What it was like to be there, and and so I really have enjoyed this sort of late phase review of my journalism career. It's just been the most interesting thing to find out that what I used to write was kind of one category, and I think I was decent at being a, yeah, a war journalist. But coming back and rethinking it and considering what was the important thing that happened there, and what, yeah, what could you focus on a detail like we stopped and to investigate a car that was pulled on the side of the road. The door was left open. There was blood all over the steering wheel. And I just kept thinking about whatever happened to that driver of that car.
Yeah.
He's gone now and nobody knows. In a city at war, nobody's going to ever investigate. Isn't it a weird thing to have been involved in? You look back on it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But I'm happy I did. It's like I did something that's in the history books. And that's really cool. You did something that's in the history books and you got to write about it.
Yeah. First draft, they say. Journalism is a first draft of history.
Yeah, and then the internet comments are the last draft.
Well, so, you know, I should say, I think I got a taste for it and I really liked the experience because early on, everything was new and everything I wrote, people had an appetite for.
Okay.
But may I say, I don't know if you'll take offense at this, but one thing I did object to in the popular press when I came back was everybody who was in Iraq or wore a uniform was a hero.
Yeah, no, I don't object to that at all. Or offense. It's not true at all.
There's hero inflation. And
sure.
When I think of guys who like sat in the internet cafes all day and and just did nothing, wouldn't want to go outside the wire. It's like, that guy is not a hero. He's just a guy doing his job.
Yeah, but and I'm glad. I mean, there's only like, what, it's like 5% of people that wear the uniform.
Right.
These dogs are, I think they're planning something. You guys anyway, go lay down.
This is not supposed to be about them, I guess. It's about writing about them.
But it's about you, too. I mean, as a writer, how did you go? You came back from deployments, and you decided to leave the Oregonian.
Well, eventually. I mean, I was a military and veterans affairs guy, writer for years.
Mm-hmm.
But I left, as I say, when it became clear that the whole industry was cycling down.
Yeah.
And it was probably time for me to find something else to do.
How did you go, so after you got back, how did you decide to move to Astoria? How did you get here?
Well, the very last full-time job I had was working as a communications guy at Pacific University in Forest Grove. And because of that, I had kind of moved out to the western edge of Portland. I was out in Hillsborough, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Then the pandemic hit. I was locked down in this soulless apartment complex where nobody knew anybody's name, and I couldn't leave.
Yeah.
You know, it would be a big event to go to the grocery store.
Oh, yeah. And, I remember those days.
And it went for months. And I finally just said, you know what? As long as we're remote, does it matter to you if I go live somewhere way outside?
Where it's pretty.
Forest Grove, someplace I want to live. And he said, well, I guess not. Since we're remote, it doesn't really make a difference. And so I just came out here on some weekend and went to an open house. And I thought, I like this place.
Oh, that's great.
And made a bid and ended up winning it. And thank God I did because I couldn't afford it now. I mean, the interest rates have changed so much. Yeah. So it just worked out perfectly for me.
You just happened to see it. You loved it.
Yeah. I always had liked Astoria. And then I saw this particular house. I said, hey, there's a good spot. And I think I could swing this. And so I did it. And
I thought you were a big Goonies enthusiast or something.
I had to watch the Goonies after I moved here so I could remember. I thought I had maybe seen it once, but no, I had not here because of the Goonies.
I thought you won some lookalike contest, and you're like, all right, this is the town for me.
Well, that's a great story, but not mine.
So you moved here. Then how did you get into the Planning Commission?
Well, you know, one thing that I really had, I'd always been kind of a policy junkie. And, you know, in the city of Portland, I was closely following everything. But when you're a journalist, you really have to stay out of it. We don't even put up yard signs in our yards or anything.
Yeah.
I was not affiliated with any political party. And in fact, I'm still not. I'm a non-affiliated voter. So it was refreshing to come to Astoria, not be employed as a journalist anymore, and think, I can get involved. And so I ended up basically sending the mayor a message, an email saying, hey, that was a great little talk you gave at the Maritime Memorial. And I just want to say, hi, I'm new here to town. And if you ever have a need for, and he said, I have an opening on the Historic Landmarks Commission. Are you interested? I said, yeah, sure. And then now it's Planning Commission. So
for people who are unfamiliar, what does the Planning Commission do?
Well, I'm still pretty new to it, and I'm hardly expert. But I mean, like, we just let's see, what was the last thing? We had a couple of applications in the last meeting. I'm blurry. I'm actually serving on both commissions at the moment because there was a death on the one, so I went back to Historic Landmarks, and I'm confused now about which meeting is which. I think we had a driveway thing to talk about. We had the last one we were, somebody wanted to get a variance to build closer to his lot line than is in the code. And ultimately we said, yes, that's okay, because it was a unbuildable next door to him and everything. So it's long. It's stuff like that. Nothing very exciting. You'll never see it in the newspaper.
So I have a good question about the Planning Commission. How many more breweries are we going to get next year? Because I'm going for, like, let's go for a baker's dozen.
Well, I know if everybody in town was like you, that would be a good business proposition.
No, but I do believe too many breweries is a real problem sometimes, and especially in small towns that can't support it during the off season. You know.
Well, yeah, I mean, actually, that was one of my little subgenres at the Oregonian for a while, was writing about the craft brewing industry, and so I was talking to the Widmers back when they were still kind of new. They hadn't made their distribution deal with Anheuser-Busch or anything, and then. Everything, again, like in journalism for a while, everything was on the upswing. There was nothing but growth. There was room for everybody. Yeah. And then you sort of hit a point in the market where everybody's...
I see it closed down all the time now.
Nowadays, yeah, they're shaking off.
Lost reach break.
I actually don't know what the overall numbers of beer consumed is, but yeah. I do know that if you don't have a special, something that makes you special, you know, some little niche in the market, mm-hmm. like we're the lager guys or whatever it is, then you're not going to stand out.
Or Rogue turned Dead Guy into like 7 different beers and their whiskeys. Because it was a marketing thing.
It's been a great branding thing for them, yeah.
So what big things are coming on the horizon for Astoria as far as planning?
Well, that's an interesting... I wrote something, again, for the Astorian, just taking note of how much building is going on in Astoria right now.
Yeah.
But when you look at it, every single one of them is a not-for-profit institution. You've got the...
What about the hotels on
the Maritime...
The old Riverwalk Hotel, isn't that being replaced?
I mean, there's plans. But nothing... I'm talking about everything that's under construction right now.
Oh, okay.
There's the Owens Adair housing project. There's...
Is that by KFC?
No, that's Cascade Behavioral Health. And that's, of course, a non-profit.
Yeah.
There's the Maritime Museum is doing something, the big expansion there, you know, and gosh.
Isn't CMH doing an expansion over by...
CMH is doing a massive expansion, and the one I'm keep trying to think of is Yakima, what's it called, the Yakima Valley Health Authority or whatever. They're the ones doing the big one at the Wedge there next to the Maritime Museum.
Oh, I thought that was CMH.
Okay. No, CMH is over on their campus, and that's... Uh-huh. Why they're closing Exchange Street. So there's a lot happening, but it's sort of like, I think in this new climate where federal money is going away suddenly, mm-hmm. it's a really good question to ask, what do we have coming up next? Or what,
all right, how great. So you're going to write about that next?
Well, it's hard to be dependent on federal money, and you know... I guess it may actually, in the logging business, there may be a bright spot there because they're, you know, the Trump administration is trying to increase logging and more use of public lands.
It just means more trees coming down, though. Well, I mean, we have to do it responsibly, but I guess that would be another show.
I'm not saying that I'm in favor of the way. But it's just, everything that has sort of built Astoria now we don't have canneries anymore. We don't have a big major employer except the hospital. And so it's really an open question is how resilient this economy is. I hope it, I hope for the best because I've placed my bet here. I like it here.
Well, I've seen it. It's a lot healthier because I, you know, recently just drove about 4,000 miles around the state of Oregon in rural towns for a documentary that I'm working on. And I see it every little town, all the main streets boarded up and the only thing that's really open are thrift stores. And it's, to me, that's sad because it seems like they're selling the memories of this town and nothing really else, you know, and there's like no mom and pop stores. And but Astoria is not like that. I see Astoria doing well.
I think Astoria punches above its weight in terms of kind of its ambitions and its kind of cultural aspirations.
Because of the Goonies. Never say die. Goonies never
No, I think it's KMUN myself. I think people flock here for Coast Community Radio.
They flock.
And I have to put in a plug for my show.
Oh, definitely. We're going
to
talk about it.
Yeah. Oh, well, you don't have to talk about it. I just want to say blues on Monday nights.
Blues on Monday nights. Why did you start a blues show?
I didn't start it. I just, they had an opening. And again, it's a matter of timing. You raise your hand at the right time and they say, yeah, we need you. Are you any good? Doesn't matter.
That's why I'm doing two shows. All right, let's go. You seem enthusiastic and prolific. Yep. Let's get you in here.
Half of life is just showing up.
Well, that's really all I have. We've gone over. I have to cut some of this. But I really appreciate you sitting down and talking to me and coming up here. Thanks, man.
Yeah. Thank you for inviting me. I hope there's something usable in this.
Oh, yeah. I think it's a good story. I think we covered a lot of good stuff.
Thank you for joining us today on River Writers. And thanks to my guest, Mike Francis, for sitting down and chatting about writing. And a big thank you to all of you out there listening. The Writers Guild of Astoria is a 501c3 nonprofit organization promoting the literary arts and serving writers in the Lower Columbia region. You can learn more and become a member by visiting www.thewritersguild.org. Until next time, keep the words flowing and your pencil sharp. I'm Sean Davis for River Writers.